It has cost $1.2 billion, created more than 500 projects and 14,000 jobs. But soon, the COVID scheme Jobs for Nature will finish. The money is running out. Everyone knew it had an end date. But what happens now?
If that funding stops, nature will be in a worse state, perhaps, than it was beforehand.
The minute you stop doing pest control in a forest, the reinvasion begins. It's a paint the harbour bridge sort of exercise in many places.
There's no point in establishing Jobs for Nature, getting people up and running, building this little bit of longevity so you've got good people there gaining skills, becoming an efficient business, and then cut them off.
They'll go back on the benefit and then who knows what after that.
I'm Sharon Brett-Kelly. Today the detail looks at the uncertain future for a predator-free apprenticeship scheme, the struggles of a King Country Save the Kiwi project that's giving jobs to ex-prisoners and unemployed people, plus the impact on ambitious plans to clean up Tauranga Harbour. First, how Jobs for Nature all started in mid-2020.
More than $1 billion was earmarked for the Jobs for Nature program in May as part of the government's cross-agency COVID-19 recovery package.
Working with iwi on pest control to prevent the loss of North Island's forest. Working with farmers to tackle everything from wallaby to fencing waterways or stabilising riverbanks. Or working with council, local government, local businesses and dock to employ thousands of people to restore wetlands.
Part of the recovery package included $200 million specifically to help struggling businesses to maintain their workforce through nature-based work, giving them a breather to recover.
It hasn't been perfect, with complaints in past years of delays to funding, jeopardising jobs and projects.
Our biggest fear that this is just slowing things down when we've got people that are out of work, desperately need to be employed. It's just languishing, and I think there needs to be some accountability. You know, this promise has been made by the government. You know, $1.3 billion, it's a lot of money. It should have created a lot more jobs than it has by now, we feel.
But for many, it's been a boon.
My name's Jessie Morgan, and I'm the Chief Executive of the Predator Free New Zealand Trust.
Tell me about what it's meant for you.
Yeah, well, we were one of the earlier projects, actually, and our project was really focused around growing the capability and capacity of the predator control sector. We're obviously highly focused on this predator-free 2050 goal, and if we're going to achieve that, we're going to need a skilled workforce. And so what Jobs for Nature has enabled us to do is invest in this apprenticeship program to grow the capability and capacity of the sector overall so that as we progress and we work out how we're going to achieve predator-free 2050, we have a skilled workforce to deliver that. Because I think within this kind of space of regenerating nature and working in conservation, we rely heavily on volunteers and we need to professionalise that sector more.
How much money did you get and how many jobs were you able to create?
Yeah, so we got $6 million. And we created 103 positions. And of that, about 70 people will complete a two-year program. I met one today, actually, and he has become the operations manager for a project down on the West Coast. And lots of them are going into these kind of more senior roles. And the point of that program for us was really growing, identifying the future leaders of the predator-free sector.
As apprentices, what do they do? I mean, what do they come out with? What is the position?
One of the challenges we had is the qualifications in the predator-free or the predator control space are very lackluster, and that's something we need to fix as a sector. That's, I guess, part of the professionalisation of the whole sector that we need to work on. But what the people did is had this huge range of experience from handling and tagging kiwi to getting their grow safe license, which is your kind of chemical license for plants, you're licensed so you can use toxins in certain areas. You know, they've got all this industry qualifications and all these tickets that they'll need to be professionals moving forward.
Mm.
But the qualifications themselves are a bit wanting.
How many will have a job to go to when the funding ends?
So glad you asked me that question. The amazing result we think from this program is 98% of our apprentices have continued on in full-time employment with the host organisations that they were placed with. You know, people think this setting a rat trap you can learn in 5 minutes, but actually becoming a skilled pest control operator takes time, and your observation skills in the bush and all that stuff you need to develop. And so by the time they've spent 2 years doing that, they're highly valued employees.
So really, the program has done its job, hasn't it? I mean, it's put in a lot of money, nearly $1.2 billion. It's created close to 14,000 jobs, more than 500 projects. Why does this funding need to continue?
Our program we designed specifically for this two-year, you know, this short-term funding boost. A lot of the projects around the country have been predator control or restoration projects. And if you stop doing that work, then a lot of the gains that you will have made will be lost. There won't be employees to do that mahi. And so we almost go back to square one for some of those projects. And so we need to continue finding ways to fund some of those projects. The successful ones, I'm not saying they were all successful, because I don't think that's true, but it's had a huge impact for Māori at place. It's brought people home from overseas to provide jobs in their local communities on their land and learn how to look after their Māori-owned land in many cases too.
Let's head to King Country's Purigorda Forest, where a Jobs for Nature project has helped turn around the lives of ex-prisoners and unemployed people.
Robert John Murahi, King Country Pest Control is the name of our outfit we operate under.
Tell me a bit about how you came about, how this group set up.
Myself and my son and my nephew were just started off just doing small-scale pest control jobs, started off as volunteers to the Department of Conservation, and then to start decided to kind of move into a contracting space to where we could then contract our services to the Department of Conservation. We were struggling to sort of get off the ground. It was just small-scale stuff. We were struggling to kind of make ends meet, just trapping in our own time, and the volunteer work wasn't putting bread and butter on our table. So we looked to grow into a contracting service. Agencies like Save the Kiwi were actually looking for people that could provide services and pest control in the long term, to be able to provide suitable spaces for the Kiwi to come back to. And Purigorda had been identified as one of those areas that could potentially be a recipient site for the Kiwi. And we were successful applicants back in 2021. Since then, we've been able to employ up to 9 staff at one point in time. We had achieved all our outcomes that was set out in the Jobs for Nature criteria. We kind of overachieved in terms of employment outcomes, in terms of our training outcomes, and also in terms of our conservation outcomes.
So before you got the funding from Jobs for Nature, were you not employed? I'm trying to figure out what the Jobs for Nature funding has meant for you and your whānau and, you know, the people that you have employed over that time.
Yeah, so what it's actually done for us is it's empowered us significantly, because there was also cultural outcomes that was achieved. There was part of the criteria for Jobs for Nature was I had to take people with no education background or training history and develop them. And I was able to take my family members and unemployed people from the whenua and get them trained up, so they then become, you know, they're working on their own land. The fourth, fifth, possibly 10th generation Māori from that area that before Jobs for Nature come along, there was really no employment in Purigorda for our whānau since the forestry days, which was way back in the 1970s when there was a lot of work. But since then, our people from that area haven't been able to get any employment. So I was able to use Jobs for Nature as a leverage to get our people trained up, become the kaitiaki of the own whenua, yeah, hopefully grow from there and to be, you know, to try and get us into the ring with the government agency so that we can be independent and sustainable.
Sometimes it's not so easy employing people who are unskilled, who have been relying on benefits, that kind of thing. Did that make it challenging for you?
So my employees have a natural passion for conservation. They've got a long-term vision of being there and leaving something positive for the next generation to grow from. You know, people like the Department of Conservation that operate within that space as well have done some awesome mahi. But the thing is with the Department of Conservation, people we work with as they come and go, our people will always be there.
So it's a lot more than just giving people jobs and trapping pests, isn't it? It's so much more than that.
It's so empowering, you know. That's why it wasn't so hard to keep these unemployed people that had been on the benefit for so many years, and some of them had even been through jail and that, you know. But they are my success stories. They've come out on top. You know, they hang their certificates, all their training certificates that they've achieved in that time are now hanging in their lounges and frames and stuff. They're very proud of what they've achieved.
The money has run out from Jobs for Nature. Are you worried that, you know, there's no certainty of funding, that your work will be, or paid work could be in jeopardy?
Yeah, I do. And you know, it's really hard. With the little bit of work that's out there, could have just sustained myself and one other staff member. But it was about trying to keep everyone employed to where instead of giving one or two people full-time employment, I've gone and try and spread it across all the employees so I don't have to make them redundant.
Mm.
So that's the kind of challenge that I'm facing as a employer.
So you're not able to pay them full-time?
We've had to reduce the hours since the reduction of Jobs for Nature. Meanwhile, I'm working behind the scenes, training and looking for work in other areas to try and maintain, you know, our employees in full-time employment roles.
I mean, what will happen to them, Robert John?
They'll go back on the benefit, and then who knows what after that. They do have the training skills to actually get jobs in other areas now with all the certifications that they've achieved. But I think their heart was set on maintaining the outcomes that have been achieved and continuing in that line of work.
You know, I can see a lot of these projects, if they do fold up through lack of funding at the end of this, all the gains that they'll have made will be lost. So it would have been a very poor investment.
David Peters chairs Project Parore in the Bay of Plenty, which has been working for 16 years clearing mangroves and silt from waterways running into Tauranga Harbour. It was awarded $1.75 million from Jobs for Nature.
We've moved away from pulling out mangroves to trying to stop the inflow of silt, sediment and nutrients into the harbour itself.
And are you winning?
Oh, it's taken about 150 years to pretty well ruin Tauranga Harbour. It's going to take us at least that long to fix it. Yeah, we're making some very good progress, and we've got one farm in particular which we use as a bit of a flagship. It was regarded as the worst farm in the Bay of Plenty 25 years ago, and guys who own it have worked on it constantly for 25 years to improve that situation, and now it's a real flagship farm. We've had the CEO of Forest and Bird up there, I've had ministers of the Crown up there, the whole regional council's been to see it, and we frequently have field days up there because we can show a farm where we've retired around about 30% of the thing entirely from farming. We've restored the wetlands on it, and we've planted out all the steep areas and fenced them off. So that farm is ostensibly smaller, but it's more productive and it's more profitable now than it ever was.
How much has Jobs for Nature contributed to this kind of success? Is this all because of Jobs for Nature?
Oh, no, because Jobs for Nature is only 4 or 5 years old. What Jobs for Nature has enabled us to do is to scale our work up. So before Jobs for Nature, we didn't have a permanent staff. It was entirely volunteer run. And we had some funding from the Ministry for the Environment. And we also worked with the Regional Council. But we would bring in contractors to do fencing and planting and so on. With the Jobs for Nature funding, we've been able to build a significant team and scale our work out to cover all of the 8 rivers that run into the northern end of Tauranga Harbour. Jobs for Nature, it's been a great leg up for a lot of groups. There's a lot of work being done now that wasn't being done 5 years ago, but it's a one-shot funding solution. And, of course, our biggest concern now, right across all of the projects, and there's dozens of them, is what happens when the money runs out. With Project Part All Day, our Jobs for Nature funding is only actually about less than 30% of our budget now. We've been pretty successful in attracting other funds.
But what will it mean if it's the funding of Jobs for Nature is still worth 30%? That's a significant amount. Does that mean that you'll have to scale back the work you do by that much?
Well, we've still got 2 years of funding left, and we're working even now to try and fill that gap in the future. It's very hard to tell with the change of government. Even under the Labor government, the Jobs for Nature funding had a fixed term. It was only 5 years. And we were all working towards trying to find a way to sustainably fund this work going into the future. You know, New Zealand, the amount of money going into environmental restoration is actually less than we spend annually on cosmetics and cosmetic surgery.
But what you're saying is that not enough is being spent on it, and it's not funding that is guaranteed.
You know, there's a lot of talk about the infrastructure funding in New Zealand and the problems we have with that. Infrastructure is actually easier than nature. You know, nature is the infrastructure that supports everything here, all our farming, all our cities, all our water, everything. And if you turn the taps on and off with funding, in the long run, we'll lose the lot. You know, species that become extinct can't be brought back. Environments, ecosystems that get destroyed are very, very hard to bring back. I mean, at least if a bridge gets cancelled, you know, 10 years, bring some more money in, concrete, steel, that's easy.
How do you think this should be done then? I mean, do you want to see Jobs for Nature refunded? Do you want to see this government reconsider, you know, putting another, what is it, $1.2 billion into it?
Well, that would be a start. You know, one of the risks we face with the rundown of this program is that a lot of the projects that started up won't be sustainable without ongoing funding. They haven't got the sort of resources that groups like we can call upon. And in areas like pest control, the minute you stop doing pest control in a forest, the reinvasion begins. Pure volunteerism is not going to get the results we need. Yeah, at the moment, we're planting 50 to 100,000 trees a year, and I'd like to double that. We don't want to end up like the Hawke's Bay did after the cyclone there last year. You know, we're focusing on steep country and trying to build resilience into the environment so that, as you know, the weather inevitably changes, that it doesn't impact us to the degree we're seeing in other parts of the country.
Back to the King Country and the small team led by Robert John Murahi. Working closely with him is Morgan Cox of Save the Kiwi.
Jobs for Nature has been a wonderful boost for communities and people wanting to get into conservation work, gain the training and establish themselves like Robert John has with his business development. You know, it's a hard ask to build a business and become sustainable in your funding in a short period of time. If we want to have really good conservation outcomes, we need people at place with the skills to do the work. And that's been the real bonus that we've seen with the training that's happened through Jobs for Nature. We now need to find a way that we can continue this mahi and to get people into a position that they can contract as well. And if we look for like a fair share model where people are paying in a fair share amount, so the government is paying in a share of money towards conservation and towards community development, We've got productive industries, we've got forestry, Manulife are contributing funding towards the pest control. There's other areas that we can get funding from. If we can all put in a fair share model and Robert John's successful in going out and finding contracts, then that's a big win, you know, it's a big success story and there's longevity in that. But we do need to all put in a fair share, and there's no point in establishing Jobs for Nature, getting people up and running, building this little bit of longevity so you've got good people there gaining skills, getting ready, becoming an efficient business, and then cut them off. We need a way of these good starts we've made becoming sustainable in the long run.
Is it too late for Robert John and his crew?
No, it's not too late for Robert John, but we're working really hard and Robert John's working incredibly hard to get himself to the point that he can find contracted income. What we find with conservation work is that there's only, you know, there's busy times, there's only so much work to go around. So it's quite good to have a diverse model where you're doing a whole lot of different work. Some of it might be in productive sectors as well. You know, for example, forestry, doing weed control in the forestry areas. Not strictly conservation work, but it keeps the guys going. So it's not too late for Robert John, but yeah, we're at a real crunch time. And people around the country are also at a crunch time. We've had a massive win. We've got a lot of skilled people, got a lot of good projects up and running. And for that to just hit a wall, you know, to drop off a cliff would be a great waste. There needs to be a way of bridging this funding through.
So, Robert John, I mean, do you feel a little bit let down? You've achieved so much. I mean, you say that you overachieved with these outcomes that were set, and yet you haven't been able to sustain it because that money has come to an end.
Not let down that the money's come to an end, just let down in a way that it's hard to get work outside of it. I was always wanting to be independent, but I had a successional plan that I was going to go out and tender to government agencies. But in reality, when it came to that point, there's a lot of obstacles to go in my path that I wasn't aware of two, 3 years ago, you know. And those long-term contracts were one of them. They have their preferred suppliers, and it's just real hard to get in the door. And they advised me to go and subcontract to their main suppliers. But when I approached them, they weren't interested in subcontracting to us at the time. So these are kind of the obstacles that we've been facing that we weren't aware of initially.
Yeah, if I could just say one last thing. It's like, Robert John's done everything that we could ask, you know, like in an area with high unemployment and, you know, young people without too much of a future. He's worked really hard to create those opportunities and really dedicated to those young people to make sure that they've got a future. And I just think that needs to be supported.
That's it for today. The Detail is supported by RNZ and NZ On Air. Alexia Russell and Davina Zimmer produced this episode and William Saunders engineered it. Thanks to Robert John Murahi, Morgan Cox, David Peters and Jesse Morgan. Ka kite.